How do you pronounce that?
Let's work on affluent first.
Is it affluent, not affluent? Is that right? Is that what I did wrong? Yep. Yeah, yeah, I always get that one wrong. That's my bazelle, John.
You got like 9 of those, though. And I only said it wrong once.
Well, yeah, but it was a pretty amazing one. It was like it was gloriously saying it wrong.
It was pretty amazing.
But I'm learning. See how I don't make the same mistake
again. I still remember exactly where I was when I heard that for the first time.
It's such a significant moment in your life.
I was walking over the Brooklyn Bridge because I was doing a weird thing. So I was walking over the Brooklyn Bridge and listening to your TV segment, and I heard you say bazelle, and I just cracked up laughing in the middle of this very crowded area. And I like rewound it like 3 times to just keep hearing it. It was amazing. I was walking over the bridge to go visit Jason Santamaria to have him read his on Insta paper.
All right, let's get started. Let's do some follow-up. And I have some quick waffle iron follow-up. I know that the ATP universe was just riveted by my waffle iron quest from a few weeks ago now, maybe a couple months ago. If you recall, we had a Wearing Pro waffle maker that is no longer being produced that I loved, and that was our Sunday breakfast for years. And then the thing kind of exploded out of nowhere, and we bought a cheap and truly terrible Hamilton Beach waffle maker based on a wire cutter pick, I believe. And it's really bad. And I feel bad saying that because Hamilton Beach is local, actually. But
yeah, but see, no one ever says, well, I guess except for this one Wirecutter review, but no one has ever said the best X is the Hamilton Beach one.
But anyways, we were gifted a Cuisinart WAF F20, a WAF 20.
It almost says waffle.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Good point. And I just would like to report in that this is a very, very, very close version to my beloved Wearing Pro. In fact, I would argue it's probably made by the same people when it's all said and done. And now we can make 2 waffles at once instead of just one, which is kind of cool. So if you're looking for a waffle iron, I strongly recommend the WAF 20 Double Belgian Waffle Maker, Stainless Steel by Cuisinart.
This looks nearly identical to the one I actually have. Like, because I have mine is still branded Waring, but I think what happened is Waring sold the consumer business to Cuisinart and they're just doing the pro end now.
Yep.
But this looks identical to mine, with the sole exception that the power switch on mine is one of those that has the red LED that glows through it.
You know,
but otherwise, it looks identical.
Yeah, it's really good. I really recommend it. And if you have the luxury of living near me, you should ask to come over for Sunday waffles. Don't be creepy. I'm just saying.
You gotta stop putting these emoji in the show notes that my computer can't display. It's just punitive now.
John! Oh my gosh.
Wearing Pro, period, space, white box.
It's the drooling emoji, in case you were curious. Mm-hmm. How old is your... Well, we'll get to that later. Let's not even go there.
The question is, what year was that emoji added to Mac OS?
Yeah, seriously. I think that was in the last year or two. Where's Jeremy Burge when we need him? All right. That is all for follow-up. That was world record fast. John, tell me, is a robot coming back from the future to terminate you? What's going on here?
I shouldn't have put a top capital letter T in there and made you think it was about SCSI Terminators, or I'm not sure what else you would have thought it was about.
I would have thought SCSI Terminators, actually, because I don't know what else
it would be. Do you know this because I already complained about it elsewhere, and that's why you know what I'm going to talk about?
No, I don't know what you're going to talk about.
Oh, well, what's your guesses?
I mean, I would have said SCSI Terminator, but I know that's even older than your computer, which is saying something. I don't know.
Because it's capitalized, it's got to be a movie reference, like to the Terminator movies. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing it's either something about Arnold Schwarzenegger, therefore California, so some kind of issues he's having with California, or
what? That doesn't make any sense.
Something that promised to be back and now is back. So maybe the keyboard problem. I don't know.
I'm proud of you for making pop culture references to a movie you haven't seen, Marco.
Correct.
Yeah. Now, for the listeners, just to be clear, the show notes read as follows. John's Terminator woes. John is, of course, capitalized. Terminator is capitalized. Woes is not capitalized. So, John, tell us, what is this about?
I feel like this is a segment of the show now where I have... I feel guilty about bringing it up because I'm just here to complain about a thing, but...
John, this is literally why people love listening to you on podcasts.
But there's such minor thing. Anyway, this one, I think it's minor, but...
Yes, they're all minor things. That's what we love.
It's minor, but it's subverted. Like, it has rearranged my mental model of, like, the media world in an interesting way. So, you know, as I've talked about in my past shows, I have all sorts of ways to watch television and movie things. I subscribed to all the services under the sun, although I did actually remember this month to cancel one of the ones that I haven't watched in a while. So I am trying to manage my subscriptions better. But every time, speaking of subscriptions, every time I have to cancel a subscription, Gruber keeps talking about how he loves that Apple subscriptions shows him all the stuff he subscribes to in one place. That's true, and it makes it easy to unsubscribe. You know, you just go to that screen and get rid of it. Every time I want to go to that screen, I have to Google for iTunes subscriptions manage, or like I have to Google to where to find it, and then like the top Google hit is that thing where they break out the instructions. I can never remember where the hell it is. Do you guys know offhand where it is?
There's actually a new URL. If you happen to be an Overcast Premium member and you go to overcast.fm/account, you can do it there. Here, I just paste it in the show notes. So it's apps.apple.com/account/subscriptions.
So you can get to it on your phone too, not going to a web browser, and that's the one I usually go to, and that's the one it eventually kicks you to what I think is a web interface. Anyway.
Yes, well, and if you click that URL from any Apple device, it works on desktop iTunes, it works on iOS, like it works on any Mac or iOS device, that will take you to the screen.
Anyway, it's like settings, your Apple ID, view Apple ID from the pop-up, and then once you're in view Apple ID, you scroll to manage subscriptions. And anyway, all this is to say I have lots of different ways to watch stuff. There's sort of a hierarchy of how much time do you want to spend looking for it. Like a lot of the times I'll want to watch a movie, and sometimes I'll be feeling bold and I'll speak into my terrible Apple TV remote and ask to watch a movie and see like what service it pops up, because it in theory knows that I subscribe to Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Prime and all the other things, and I want to see what it'll bring up. And if it's on Netflix, I'm like, oh great, I'll just watch it, right? But if we're in a hurry, like, oh, the kids want to watch a movie, or we're all sitting down as a family to watch a movie, and I don't want to deal with figuring out which of the umpteen services that I have has that movie. Like, is it on HBO? Is it in the Showtime app? Is it like, I don't want to deal with that at all. I just go to iTunes and just buy the movie, because it's like, it used to be in my mind, the most reliable, the fastest, and also the most expensive, obviously, way to get it, because I have all these services I subscribe to. If they have the movie for free, why would I pay $12.99 to buy the movie or rent it, depending on whether I think I'm ever going to want to watch it again, right? So in that situation, I was bringing my family, my children up to pop culture snuff so they don't end up like Marco. And they hadn't seen the Terminator movies, because Terminator 1, the first Terminator movie, not titled Terminator 1, is rated R, so I couldn't really show this to my kids until they're older, right? So my son is old enough to see it now. So I said, we're going to watch Terminator, then we're going to... I really just wanted him to watch Terminator 2, which is not rated R, but you can't watch Terminator 2 without watching the Terminator. So I'm like, all right, I don't want to deal with finding where this movie is available. It might be on one of my streaming services, I don't know. Let me just go to iTunes and buy it, because I know... I instantly know how to do that. I don't bother with any voicing. I just go to iTunes, type the Terminator. You know, I can find it, and I'll just pay the money, and we'll play immediately, and I won't have any problems. And this is particularly true of lots of times that I'm looking for, like, anime or foreign movies or things with subtitles where I don't want to deal with, like, is it going to be the dub? Are the subtitles going to be burned in a weird font if I see it in streaming? Or even just regular movies, is it going to be reformatted on Amazon Prime, or it's, like, the weird unrated version? Like, iTunes, I feel like, is the canonical... There's a movie, you know it exists, you just want to see the movie the way you expect to see it, so go to iTunes. And in the case of the Terminator, we're watching it, and as we're watching the movie, immediately I notice, but it just gets worse and worse as we watch the movie, the audio sync is off. The words, people's mouth, lips moving, don't match the audio. At first I'm like, boy, back in the 80s, they were pretty sloppy with the ADR, but then I remember, no, it's not the ADR, it's actually out of sync, and it's getting worse. So I do all the things. You don't want to ruin the movie experience, like, wait, I got to pause, I got to fix it, anything. One time I tried, during the movie, I tried like pausing and reloading, like when someone got up to go to the bathroom. I tried pausing and then playing, it didn't work. I killed the application, that didn't work, and then we were back. So we just watched it with out-of-sync audio, and I'm like, this is BS. Like, it was one of the few times I was thinking I should ask for a refund.
Wait, you watched an entire film, even one you've seen before, with out-of-sync audio?
I've seen it many, many times before. I mean, it wasn't that. I don't know if anyone else in the room noticed it was out-of-sync, but I noticed.
I cannot fathom John Siracusa watching an entire 2-ish hour movie.
It's not a talky movie, first of all. And second of all, it's worse to like interrupt the movie. Like, I'd gotten everyone together. We're all going to watch the movie. The lights are off in the room. Like, you can't kill that experience by saying, I'm not going to futz with my Apple TV for 20 minutes. Again, that's the reason I'm doing it on iTunes.
If anyone can do that, it's John Siracusa can kill that experience by futzing with the Apple TV.
I would absolutely not do that. I'm the one who doesn't want you to stop in the middle of the movie. I want you to like watch it uninterrupted and have your full concentration. Anyway, mm-hmm. And this is just blowing my mind because it was like I said, the most expensive way you can get this movie. I'm like, what could the problem possibly be? I'm like, is it my AV setup? I'm like, no, because I use this Apple TV to watch video all the time through the same receiver, and there's no problem with the audio sync. I was starting to think that it had to be the file, like that actually this is somehow got uploaded to Apple servers with a file where the audio is not in sync. So to test that, I downloaded the audio on my Mac and tried playing it there. Two things there. One, I'm doing this on a 5K iMac, which is not that old of a machine, right? It's, I think it was, is it the current 5K iMac still? Maybe it is. It's a 1080p movie, and my 5K iMac could not play it without dropping frames, which I don't understand at all. I tried it in iTunes itself, and I tried it in like the new crappy QuickTime player, and both of them, they'd play it, but occasionally it would drop frames. But anyway, despite them dropping frames, the audio was still in sync with the frames that were there. So it's not the file. The audio isn't syncing the file. I tried rebooting the Apple TV. I tried checking the audio and video settings in the Apple TV. I tried doing software updates in the Apple TV. It didn't need any. It was already up to date. This is an Apple TV 4K, all on the latest version of everything, playing an iTunes movie. I tried it on multiple different dates. Maybe it's just weird today. Maybe there's something else going on. It played this movie with audio was out of sync, and it got worse like farther into the movie it went. So this is... A, it's making me think about how I might try to get a refund, although every time I think about it, I'm like, I have no idea how to do that, and it'll probably involve calling someone on the phone, and it'll be a hassle. Who the hell knows? So now I have this cruddy copy of The Terminator with the audio out of sync, and now, the next time I need to get a movie and think, like, what's the least problematic way to get it? I don't know, maybe I'll just try to buy it from Amazon or something? I don't even know what my next in line is. Terminator 2, by the way, didn't have this problem on the Apple TV, because we watched Terminator 2, like, the next day, and I had already purchased both of them ahead of time, so it wasn't like I had to reach, you know, I watched Terminator 2, the audio was in sync. For the most part, like, there was a few seconds where I'm like, wait a second, is it out of sync again? I'm like, no, that was probably actually just bad ADR. Anyway, This is really bothering me, mostly because I don't know how to explain it, but secondarily because now I don't really have a go-to for you're in a hurry, you want the movie now.
I mean, do you think, like, does one bad occurrence here ruin this whole service? Because, like, I too have had occasional problems with iTunes bought content. Usually it's TV shows, but they're very occasional. Like, the hit rate is very high, like, as a percentage. And so if you look at what else is out there, like, I don't think any of us have more experience with, like, you know, Amazon purchases for digital downloads or anything like that. So we don't really know if they're actually better. I mean, in this case, this isn't a problem where, like, you know, Apple LOL web services. This is a problem where, like, the file itself was probably at fault. So the file itself was probably messed up. And, like, what can you really do about that? Like, if you know, no service is going to be impervious to content providers uploading bad files.
But the file wasn't messed up. Like I said, the audio was in sync when I played it on the Mac. It dropped frames, but the audio was in sync. Right? So, I mean, there was some kind of... It's like a problem with playback. And it's not like a... It's not 4K, I don't think. Like, my TV is not 4K anyway. But, like, I don't understand what its problem could have possibly been.
Well, it could have been maybe it's like a bitrate thing. Like, maybe it was encoded with, like... it didn't cap the bitrate in a way that, like, your Mac... Well, I was going to say that your Mac is powerful enough to keep up, but not your Mac, per se. One's Mac could be powerful enough to keep up compared to an Apple TV. In your case, your Apple TV is probably faster than your Mac.
I watched it on my iPad, too, and also had audio sync problems then. Not as bad as the Apple TV, but definitely noticeable. So it is baffling. So, yeah, maybe I'll just, you know, I don't know, maybe I'll find a way to get a refund and like, just continue to go back to it as my only choice, but it's definitely weird, and there's no way in the interface to complain about this. I guess it's something they don't expect to happen. Like, The Terminator is a popular movie, so I don't quite understand how this could happen and not them not know about it, but maybe because everyone, like me, just gives up before they even start trying to figure out how to tell them. Hey, Apple, your copy of The Terminator is messed up. There, I told them.
File a bug.
Why did you not try Plex? Like, you know, one of the advantages of Plex is that when you're Plex friends with other people, as I know you are, other people might have the movie you're looking for.
That's like the least reliable way. I got to rely on someone else's server being up and my bandwidth, their upload bandwidth being adequate to keep the movie streaming and them not turning off whatever computer they're running Plex on. That I would never choose that for it's time to see a movie right now and be guaranteed that it works.
Really? That's bananas to me, because in my eyes, that is the most reliable way, because, you know, I've never had an instance where one of my friends was randomly turned off the computer I was using.
I the my Plex server that you have access to is on my wife's computer that she restarts all the time for any reason she feels like it. So you could be in the middle of a movie and it could restart. So I'm going to tell you, do not expect five nines from my Plex server.
Well, also, I mean, in my experience, you know, Plex server files are often either files that fell off of trucks or files that people have encoded themselves with rips and everything. And those, in my experience, tend to be the least reliable in terms of audio sync to video. Like that actually is a very common problem.
If people are bad at it, yeah. But my main thing is it would be lower quality because it would probably be re-encoded from something that was already lossy encoded.
Well, even if that's true, at least like maybe it's just my values, but I would much rather have an SD video that is matched to the audio than a 1080 video where the audio is, you know, 10-15 seconds. Well, they're milliseconds off.
You know, you're overestimating the audio sync. I'm talking the audio drift I'm talking about here.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said seconds. But yeah, but you get my point is that personally for me, and maybe you don't have to agree, but for me, I would much rather have synced crummy video than unsynced pretty video.
I need to have it all. Anyway, someone mentions the Movies Anywhere thing. Do you guys know about that?
Yeah. If anybody out there doesn't know about this, you need to know about this.
Yeah, so it's some service that I think Disney ran that somehow they got deals with all the other streaming people where, like, if you buy anything anywhere, it can appear in Movies Anywhere, and you can play it back there. And I think it might be DRM-free when you play it in that context. Like, if I was
I doubt it's DRM-free. But, so yeah, the point is basically, like, they have deals with, like, Amazon, iTunes, whoever else, and including when you redeem those codes that come with Blu-rays. And so you can buy a movie on a Blu-ray, redeem the code at Movies Anywhere, and then it shows up as a purchased movie on Apple's side in your iTunes movie account if they have it. Like, it's crazy. I don't know how they rigged this deal up with Apple. Like, I don't know how they got Apple to agree to this, or anybody else for that matter. But yeah, basically, like, almost every studio participates in this now. And so you can buy, like, for me, like, I bought a bunch of Blu-rays on Black Friday because they were all discounted on various Black Friday sales. They were cheaper than buying movies, like, on iTunes and Amazon and stuff. I bought a bunch of Blu-rays, I typed in the codes, and I put the Blu-rays in the closet. And I'm not sure if I'll ever watch them, but I have the codes, and so now all those movies just showed up in my iTunes account. It's great.
Yeah, I should try. I always forget about that. I do have that app installed, and I do look at it. It's kind of cool to see all your movies, like, aggregated into a single place and everything. And I do use it occasionally to get, like, file downloads for you know, services that I traditionally think of as, although I think Amazon gives you file downloads now. Anyway, I always forget that it exists when it comes time to watch a movie like this. So I could have just bought it on iTunes, quit the Movies app, and then gone to the Movies Anywhere thing and see if I could play it there. Although, do they have an Apple TV app? I have the app on my iPad where I watch a lot of cruddy movies, but I assume they have an Apple TV app somewhere.
The actual Movies Anywhere? I'm not sure. I've never looked because I don't need to because everything that I put in there shows up in my iTunes thing.
Oh, well. Anyway, watching movies is hard.
We are sponsored this week by IGG Software, makers of Banktivity, which is an easy-to-use, full-featured personal finance management app exclusively for Apple platforms. Maybe you want to keep track of what you spend your money on and where your money comes from. Yeah, you can use Numbers or Excel to do that, but there's a better way. Banktivity does those things, but oh so much more. For starters, Banktivity connects to over 10,000 banks to make data entry easier. Banktivity can also track other kinds of accounts, like your loans, investments, retirement accounts, and more. Oh, you said you like budgets? Banktivity can do that too, including customizable reports, planning, bill tracking, and more. But Casey, you say, I like to enter my expenditures when they happen. I'm tired of having a pocket or wallet full of crumpled receipts. No problem. Banktivity's iOS apps will let you do precisely that and more. But what if I want an at-a-glance picture of my financial world while I'm out for a run? Well, first of all, weird. Second of all, there's even a watch app that you can use to get a quick look at your budget or see your account balances all on your wrist. Casey, I'm interested, you say, but I don't want some sort of abandoned software. IGG and Banktivity are here for dark mode. They were here for the 64-bit transition. They were ready for the transition to Intel, and that should tell you something. To quote IGG, we are committed to macOS and iOS, and we will be there for whatever comes next. ARM-based laptops, anybody? Wink. Here's the thing. Late last year, I was using some abandoned software and resisted switching for the longest time. Banktivity sucked in over a decade of my personal transaction history, no problem, and I was up and running in no time. IGG pays us to talk about their software, but they can't pay me to say this. I use Banktivity, and I really like it. Don't be a procrastinator like I was. Get a jump on your personal finances for 2019 in January. Check out Banktivity. They have a free 30-day trial for macOS and are offering a special discount for ATP listeners. Go to iggsoftware.com/ATP for 10% off Banktivity. Use coupon code ATP10, all caps, no spaces at checkout. They also have a 90-day money-back guarantee when you purchase through them. You have no reason not to give Banktivity a shot. You have the best computer on the planet. Why not have the best financial software? Our thanks to Banktivity and IGG Software for sponsoring ATP. All right. Over the last, 48 hours or so, maybe a week or so, Apple has brought something back from the dead. We have iPhone XS and XR smart battery cases, and even the XS Max gets a smart battery case now. Smart battery cases for everyone. I never had one originally. I was on the camp that it looked kind of silly with the humpback on it. These appear to be a little bit less silly looking to my eye because the humpback is going all the way to the bottom of the case rather than kind of being a bump in the middle. But they're $130 for the XS one. Is the Max one more expensive? I'm sure it is.
I think they're all the same.
Oh, they are all the same. You're right. These, I guess, are pretty cool. Like, this is not something that I personally feel like I need in my life, but they charge via Qi now, which is really cool. So the case will charge via Qi, and then the case will charge your phone. And from what I understand, they're really great. Marco, you got one, didn't you?
Not the new one, no. But we did have the old one. Tiff used it on her iPhone 7, I think, for almost the entire time that she had it. I think you nailed it. We're like, you know, we all made fun of it when it came out because it looked just ridiculous. It was like by far one of the ugliest looking Apple products that they've ever released. And, you know, over the coming weeks after it was released, we came to learn, well, they did it that way because, you know, it wouldn't block the antenna bands, and every other case blocks the antenna bands and everything. And so, like, there were some reasons why they made it so ugly. Like, the shape of it had some practical upsides to it. And then in use, it was actually kind of nice because you could rest your pinky along the bottom edge of that, like, backpack that it was wearing. And so it was a way to, you know, like, if you look at pretty much any way that people hold large phones in more easy ways by sticking things to the back, they all kind of rest on this principle of, like, it's easier to hold stuff near the middle of the back of the phone than it is, like, to reach top and bottom edges. And so you could kind of rest your pinky on that little ledge and support the phone that way, and it was easier to hold a bigger phone that way. The new ones don't have that, but and that's, honestly, I consider that a slight regression in that way, because it actually was really nice to hold that. But otherwise, the new ones appear to have similar general appeal in that they, you know, they're kind of frumpy looking, but they're providing excellent utility if you need a battery case. We currently don't have a need for battery cases, but if we were to need one, I'd go right to that one, because when you compare it to other battery cases, like, it has the same advantages that the first one did. First of all, it charges via lightning in. This is very rare for peripherals, and especially for battery cases. Almost all of them require micro USB in to charge, which now means you're carrying multiple types of cables with you necessarily. Whereas if it has lightning in, you can just plug in however you normally charge your phone. As you mentioned, Casey, this one also supports wireless charging, which very few battery cases do. So again, that's even better. It's like, however you charge your iPhone now, you need to change nothing about that to charge this case. And then my favorite thing about the smart battery cases compared to, you know, other ones is other ones, they kind of act like USB battery packs in the sense that you have to turn them on, and then when you turn them on, they activate and become a power source for your phone. Your phone thinks it's plugged into the wall and pulls power until either it's full or the case battery is depleted. And there's a number of things about this that Apple improves upon with theirs. So first of all, there's no on-off switch. You don't have to think about whether it's on or off. You just charge through it when you have a chance, and it charges your phone until it's empty. So, like, the phone stays at 100% until the battery case is empty, and then the phone starts draining itself from there. You can view the charge level in the batteries widget on iOS, which, again, like other cases, like, you're at best with cases you have, like, you know, like a four LED kind of dot situation, but that's usually the most detail you'll get. The other cases also have, you know, because you have to, like, manually turn them on or off, it's kind of wasteful if you turn them on and the phone fills up and you don't turn them off. Like, it can slowly drain power in a weird, inefficient way. You can accidentally leave it on when you don't really need it to be there, like when you're not even using it, and that can slowly drain the power. Or you can think you're charging up and then it's actually off. Like, having to manage the power switch on your battery case is annoying. And so for Apple to remove that and add all these, you know, smarts about how it charges it and where you can show the battery info and everything, and not having to have your own separate type of cable, it's a really convenient package. Like, I gotta say, it's very well done, and it's a decent capacity. It's not like super, super high capacity. If you need, like, maximum capacity, you want to look at other things besides this. But otherwise, like, it's a really nice package. Unfortunately, as usual, it's more expensive than what it replaced by a good deal. I think the old one was $100, I think. So if this is $130, that's a big increase. But it's typical of many modern Apple things, which is, it kind of hurts to eat the price. But if you can get past that, it's a pretty good option.
The thing I find so weird about this battery case, and has been weird about a couple of things, is the timing. Like, it seems to me that it would have been much better to release the battery case at the same time that you release the phone, because that's when there's going to be a big rush of people who are buying the phone because they want the latest and greatest, and they're the least price sensitive people. And when they buy it, they're going to buy accessories and they're going to buy a case. And if they're the type of person who used a battery case before, they might want a battery case again, and it's not available for months. Like, that's just bad. I mean, probably this is not their most important peripheral, so whatever. Same thing with the 10R, with the clear case and everything. It's better to have the peripherals available when you launch the phones. And of all the things that you can't get done, obviously getting the phones ready for sale is much more important than getting these peripherals ready for sale. But it's a type of thing that you would, that it seems odd that Apple has these weird misses in timing on stuff like this. Not that I'm saying they should delay the phone or whatever, but cases, like, they're, it's not that. I don't, what is it that made this thing be delayed? Is there something about this case? Did they not have batteries because they had to use them all in the phones? Like, I'm sure there's some explanation somewhere, but it just seems weird to me that, you know, it would be better if they could get their acts together and have launches where something isn't delayed. And the same thing with the 10R delay itself, which obviously is more explicable because they, you know, maybe there's some conservation of parts or manufacturing capacities for the big phone launches. But here's hoping that someday soon we can actually have a flagship product launch from Apple that where everything launches at the same time, including all the peripherals, and there's no weird manufacturing problems, and there's no like slow trickle. I mean, this is after the holidays, for crying out loud. I don't understand it. Oh, and as for the specific battery case, the only thing looking at it, and you can tell me, well, maybe it's not the same. You can't tell me, Mark, because you had the one you had was for the 7?
Yeah, that's the only one that's ever existed before this.
Yeah, right. I'm just trying to remember which phone it was on. So the battery case, unlike the Apple leather case and the Apple silicone case, goes all the way around top and bottom. And for a 10-style phone where you constantly swipe up from the bottom, I don't like the idea of hitting the lip on the case. Now, I can't tell from pictures whether the lip is big or small or whether you notice it or whatever, but I do. One of the things I like about Apple's cases, the leather one and the silicone one, is they don't even have anything down there. So you have no chance of hitting a lip when you do that very, very frequent gesture, which is swipe out from bottom. So if I go to an Apple store and these things is on display, I'll have to try it out. But I think it looks better than the old one. It's more elegant. I think I remember defending the old one's looks because it's like that Johnny Ive, let's not hide the fact that there's something slapped to the back of this phone. Let's just, you know, let's embrace that and say, guess what? It's a phone with a thing stuck on the back. This one actually does less of that. It's like, well, it is a phone with a thing stuck on the back, but let's try to blend it in, you know, to make it not quite as obvious, like putting, you know, strategic makeup on a very large nose. But it looks nice. And if I had to get a battery case, I think I would also get this one. But the things you said about capacity and price, like the dollar per watt hour or whatever, is not good on this case. But that's Apple for you.
No, and you know, like, what the reality is, like, if you need a battery case at all, you're already, like, you know, a subset of the population. And then, like, if you need a big, big, big battery case, you know, those people exist. There, you know, there's plenty of them in absolute numbers, but, like, that's such a smaller percentage of the population. And, like, Apple's not going to make a case that is that big and heavy to have, like a 3x your iPhone battery size battery in it. Realistically, this is the most they're going to do, and that's, you know, that's plenty for them, I think.
So one interesting caveat about this case that Renee Ritchie pointed out, and a couple other people did as well. You look at this case, and you're like, oh, it's the iPhone XS smart battery case. And they have the one for the Max, and they have one for the XR, yada, yada. What about the 10? They never had a smart battery case for the 10. But the XS is the same as the 10. Can I just take the XS smart battery case and use it on the 10? Well, the XS is kind of sort of the same as the 10, like the same dimensions, and the camera's in the same place, and so on and so forth. But there are things that are different about it. And initially, I think people were like, that you can't use it with the 10 because of those differences, because, like, you know, the speaker holes won't align or whatever. But Renee Ritchie said, yes, you can use the XS battery case with the iPhone 10. When you attach it to the iPhone 10, apparently you may get an incompatibility pop-up that says, like, you can't use this device with this peripheral or whatever. But if you just dismiss that dialogue, apparently it charges.
it charges fine.
Yeah, and if it doesn't work, they say if you just update iOS or reboot or whatever, it'll work. You still have the problem that it'll be covering up some of your speaker holes and they won't be aligned. So, like, you might not get a good sound performance out of it. But
like, the speaker holes, like, you know, the XS reduced the amount of holes in the bottom because it had to make room for that antenna band. But the speaker holes that it replaced were the ones that weren't there for any purpose anyway other than visual symmetry. Like the speakers on the bottom of all modern iPhones, they look like there's two speakers at the bottom, but only one of them is actually the speaker. You can tell by playing something and covering up each one with your thumb, you can figure out which one is the actual speaker. And so I think that the one that's the real speaker hasn't changed between these two models. All they did was reduce the number of holes that were around what on the other side is actually the microphone hole.
Oh, so are you blocking the microphone? Like, I don't know which ones are blocked and which ones aren't.
Well, I'm guessing the location of the microphone didn't change. Like, all they did, I think, when they added the antenna band down there and reduced the number of holes, I think the holes they got rid of were holes that weren't necessary anyway. So I think that's why, like Renee even said, he tried it on his 10 and he couldn't tell a difference with the sound. I think it's because there really isn't actually a difference.
It's kind of weird that Apple didn't just make a 10 case. Like, I mean, I was speaking about timing, how this didn't launch with the 10S. If they were going to make a battery case for the 10 style phone, why did they not do it for the entire year that the 10 was the flagship phone? I don't know. It's weird. Don't they want people's money? Don't they want this? I mean, the margins must be great on these things. Anyway, they look really cool. Do they come in colors? I just see it in black here.
Oh, just black and white.
Black and white, yeah.
And I will warn you, if you've never had the white silicone case, ours was white that Tiff used, and they do pick up lint and dirt and discoloration like crazy. You know, I still think the white is the better looking one of the two, but just don't put it in like jeans pockets and expect it to come out not covered in blue lint.
If you're making a science fiction movie, definitely get the white one. But just make sure you get it in the first few takes because it won't look that color for very long.
Yeah, exactly.
So doesn't it look like something from a sci-fi movie? It looks totally like something from a 70s sci-fi movie, or it is a real device. The white looks super, super future-y.
I could see that. I will say, too, so as I mentioned, like I don't usually use these kind of things. I have in the past. I have owned them in the past and have tried various things for various phones. But I really have tried over time. I've kind of learned my lesson a few times to stop buying things that depend on the exact size and shape of a particular phone. Because we've seen this business long enough by now that we know that pretty much every new phone that we buy is very likely to require all new accessories of that type, which means that you can spend $130 on this, but in however many years it is between now and when you buy your next phone, which is probably not that big of a number, that's all the use you're going to have out of this. At that point, this becomes useless and you throw it away or whatever. You're out that money and that's it. Like, or, you know, if you're lucky, you give it away for somebody who needs it. But whatever accessories you buy that are cases or that are like very tightly fitting things or integrated things that depend on a phone's shape, those have a very limited lifespan. And so I have found over time that I try to minimize that as much as possible. Like, I still usually will get like whatever Apple's leather case is for my phone of the time. But I try to keep it at about that and hopefully nothing else. Anything like docks or anything, I try to make them, try to get the ones that are size adjustable where they have like little rails you can move back and forth or whatever to accommodate different phone sizes. And that will usually last many years or, you know, rely on things like wireless charging pads instead of docks and, you know, in certain cases, because it's so wasteful to get accessories like this. And then 1 to 3 years later, that battery is still good and could still be useful, but, well, you know, I got a new phone, it doesn't fit. Oh, well, you know, give it away, throw it away, whatever. So generally, I find for my external battery needs, which are relatively infrequent, I greatly prefer just standalone USB batteries that I can plug in to my phone with a cable if I actually need that, because it's infrequent enough that the inconvenience of that is greatly... It is much less significant than the wastefulness of having to buy one of these things every year or two. If you're somebody who actually needs that extra battery life every day, then this makes more sense, because then like that calculus changes. But if you only need it like when you're on vacations or at conferences or whatever, I strongly suggest considering just a regular USB battery pack, which are so plentiful these days, you probably already have one, and just using a cable, because it isn't as convenient or integrated as this, but it goes in and out of your pocket a lot easier, and it's so much less wasteful over time.
I used to always get battery cases for my phones the same way that you did, and my math also changed, and I've come to the same conclusion that you have, Marco, that you know, I use them. I would use the batteries at conferences and maybe a couple other times, maybe if I were to go to a concert or something like that. But generally speaking, I never really need a battery for my phone. And when I need one, I can use past and probably future sponsor Away. You know, my suitcase has a battery and I can just, and granted, it's physically quite large because it's designed to mostly live in the suitcase, but it'll pop right out and I can take that with me. And I would much rather have one battery that will last me across multiple generations of iPhone than have to pay $130 or what have you every single time the phone changes, even the speaker grills change. You know what I mean? And so I completely agree with you, Marco, that I personally think that a external battery pack that is not, you know, strapped to your phone is much better.
Also, like, we live in a multi-device world. If you get a standalone USB battery thing, you can charge your phone, yes. Or if you're out somewhere and you need to charge on your iPad or your Kindle or your Apple Watch or whatever else, you can charge those also. In fact, if you get a USB-C one, you can charge a MacBook. It's better, rather than having like 15 different batteries for all these different devices or battery cases or whatever else, just get one USB battery pack that you will keep charged and that you can keep in whatever bag you carry most often and have it be as versatile as possible. It's just nicer and easier in general to consolidate and have fewer like phone-specific accessories. And to have your kind of like to, in like an Alton Brown kind of way, like to have more generalists and fewer like single purpose batteries, just get like one or two general purpose USB batteries and be done with it.
Unitasker is the word you're looking for.
Yes.
Talking about this first, I think that most people who are not tech enthusiasts keep their phones for way longer than we think. So maybe it's less of an issue for them. Like, I just think about the phones I see people using and how old they are and how destroyed they all are and just how, like, they're not, like, you see something like that and you're like, it's kind of like me with my car. It's like, they're not going to get a new one until that one, like, breaks or they can tell is about to break or, like, stops being functional for the purpose, right? That's kind of, you know, so maybe it makes more sense there. But the other thing it made me think of is the reason I've never bought a dock for any of my phones or iPod Touches or whatever. I always wonder, like, if the dock or charging station or whatever market is kind of like people get excited about one particular one that there's some Kickstarter for or something, or they see a cool one for sale and they buy it and they love it and it's next to their bedside or wherever it is. And then it comes time to get their new phone. And what they want is to be like, I want to use it. You keep using my old dock, or just find whatever the updated version of this dock is for the new phone. And they find it, oh, the company that made this dock is out of business, or this was just a random Kickstarter, or the company that makes this dock is still in business and makes a dock for my new phone, but it's totally different because of the whims of fashion. And they're like, but I just want my old dock. Or like that dock that you got involved in Kickstarter, Marco, where like the dock didn't ship until they had changed to Lightning, so they had to give it this weird adapter. Like, docks are, not that they're expensive or anything, but especially if you, like, fall in love with one and build your habits on it, and it's like, this is just what I want, because it's beautiful, and it has my phone in the right position, and, you know, maybe some of them have a little place for your watch. I think both of you have some weird thing that, like, puts your phone and your watch in it, don't they?
Studio
like,
neat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you can make those better or worse, like, more flexible. I think the ones you have are basically just, like, a big expanse with a Lightning port poking up, and you're like, well, as long as there's a Lightning port, you know, this isn't trained to a particular width or thickness, but, you know.
Yeah, it's adjustable to different thicknesses.
Yeah, that's why I've never been into those things, because I just feel like if I ever found one that I really liked, I would just be disappointed. Speaking of finding something I really like and being disappointed, my stupid phone pouch, same thing. My phone pouch was looking a little rough. Like, you know, I'm using the one for my 7, which I thought, you know, even though the butt sticks out of it, I'm like, well, it's still, and I like it, it's fine. The butt sticks out, but it's fine. I'm like, well, this is looking kind of beat up. I should order another one. Guess what? They don't make it anymore. Very sad.
You could just go without a pouch.
No, it's crazy talk.
We are sponsored this week by Care Of. It's the new year, and you probably have new health goals. Do something good for your health in 2019 with the help of Care Of's monthly subscription vitamin service. Whether you're focused on boosting your energy levels, getting more sleep, or just generally being healthy, Care Of builds a vitamin routine that's made just for you and your health goals, and they make it super easy to keep this resolution up. 90% of people fall short of FDA guidelines for at least one vitamin or nutrient. But as a consumer, it's hard to know what you're supposed to be taking. So Care Of has this online quiz. It lets you know exactly what you need in less than 5 minutes. You answer a few simple questions about your diet, health goals, and lifestyle, and Care Of gives you personal, scientifically backed vitamin and supplement recommendations. And they have lots of different options for you. There's even vegan and vegetarian supplement options available to match your dietary needs. And Care Of believes that getting your vitamins should be easy and convenient. Otherwise, you'll forget to take them. So Care Of gives you daily vitamin and supplement packs. It's everything you need in just one little tiny little pouch. And they contain exactly what you need, customized just for you. And these are sent right to your door every month. And a portion of each sale goes towards the Good Plus Foundation, which provides expectant mothers in need with valuable prenatal vitamins. So take advantage of this month's special New Year offer at Care Of. For 50% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins, go to takecareof.com and enter code ATP50. That's takecareof.com with special code ATP50 for 50% off your first month. Thank you so much to Care Of for sponsoring our show.
It is the middle of January, which means it's time for us to start thinking about 2019. And this has been in the show notes for a couple of weeks now. But I was thinking a while back that I feel like there are two interesting questions that I'd like to hear your opinions on. And I'd like to, you know, weigh in with my own opinion about Apple's 2019. And it seems like more than I can remember in the last several years, everyone, myself included, is kind of anticipating a very turbulent year for Apple, and not in the bad way necessarily, but just that there's probably going to be a lot going on this year. And I got to thinking about, you know, what are some of the things that all of us feel like we're seeing some smoke about? Things like Marzipan, which we've heard about already at WWDC last year. And I don't recall what the formal statement from Apple was. I don't think they ever committed to this year, but it certainly stands to reason that we should hear more about it this year, even if it's not formally released. There's been plenty of smoke around the idea of ARM-based Macs. And then, as we discussed last episode, supposedly there's a Mac Pro this year, maybe, possibly. And additionally, this new Apple streaming service, which I have unequivocally decided will be called Apple Video. You heard it here first.
I actually agree.
Yes. See, thank you. That will be this year, I think. And additionally, in the last week or two, we've heard, I think it was in the last few days, actually, we've heard rumblings of maybe a new iPad mini and maybe a new iPad Touch. What? That might be happening in 2019? So given this list of potential events, and maybe there's others that I didn't think of, I have two questions to ask each of you. And I can either start or finish, it doesn't matter. But the two questions are, what generally accepted story or event, like the ones I just went through, are you personally most interested in? And then secondarily, what generally accepted story or event do you think will affect Apple the most? So you may not be into it at all. So let's take an example. Like, I don't care about the Mac Pro. I actually don't think it'll affect Apple the most, but you could make an argument that a new Mac Pro could make a big difference to Apple. So maybe I would choose, you know, that the Mac Pro is the thing that will affect Apple the most, even though I don't care. So let's start with Marco. What do you think you are most interested in? And let's go through those for the three of us, and then we'll come back around and we'll talk about what will affect Apple the most.
So I have a hardware answer and a software answer here. My hardware answer. So my theme here, I kind of touched on it last week. I think this is going to be a big year for Macs and for Pro Mac hardware and maybe software too. But like, I think this is a big year for the Mac in a number of fronts. We've heard either Apple promising or rumors rumbling to the effect of big things happening. At least, you know, the Mac Pro hardware, the display that should be coming out, the possible rumblings of MacBook Pro update maybe. And even, you know, the remote possibility of ARM Macs, which I think are possible this year. Not, I wouldn't say likely, but I think possible. This could be a really interesting year for the Mac in particular. And they've kind of like been leading up to this. I think this is the year where a lot of questions get resolved. That's ultimately what I'm excited about, is like, we have the giant question of the Mac Pro. We have the giant question of what the heck are they going to do in the next MacBook Pro? Are they going to change the keyboard? Are they going to do anything else to address, you know, Pro needs a little bit better or whatever else? Like, the Mac Pro, I think, is interesting in like John's Halo Car sense, but it's not like super important actually in most ways. So for the hardware pick, I actually am more interested, even though this is sacrilege on the show, I'm actually more interested to see how and if they answer questions about the MacBook Pro. That is the more interesting hardware thing to me. And so I look forward to, I don't know that we're going to get an answer to that this year, but I think it's about time for that. I think it's likely. I think we probably will. And I just really want to see, what is the next MacBook Pro? How do they take these, you know, 3 years of feedback and make the next product out of that? I really hope that that gets answered this year. And I hope it's a satisfactory answer, because it has seemed recently like they're in the weirdest spot right now, where in something that I don't think we expected, their desktops are actually in pretty good shape right now. this is a great time to be a Mac desktop user. Like, the iMac Pro is fantastic. The new Mac Mini is fantastic. Who would have thought, you know, that I would be saying these things, right? And the iMac is a little outdated, but, you know, it's so the iMac is not a great buy right now, but it's still a great computer. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just outdated. So, like, the high-end and, like, the specialized desktop lines are great. And the Mac Pro is probably going to make that even better. But because the iMac Pro is so great already, and the Mac Mini is also so great and also solves a lot of potential Mac Pro use cases, there's actually, I think, less need than ever for the official Mac Pro. So the Mac Pro, I think, I'm looking forward to it finally, and I might even buy one, but it's actually less burning of a question for me, because the laptop line is, I think the MacBook Pro is still like partially on fire. It's not quite as bad as before the keyboard membrane version, but it's not great. And so I really want to see how that's resolved. And I think we will actually have that answered this year. And then on the software side, again, this is some Mac excitement here. I want to see what the heck Marzipan ends up being like. That's the big question to me. ARM Macs might also be a big thing. And that would be, you know, potentially, you know, cool, new, interesting hardware and some kind of software ramifications. But like, that's honestly not as interesting to me as what the heck is going on with Marzipan. Because I'm a Mac user. I love the Mac. I'm an iOS developer. I don't love developing for the Mac, and I've done very little of it as a result. I love developing for iOS. I'm also, as a Mac user, I've been scared about the clear slowdown in the development of new good Mac software over the last decade or so. So like, the Mac has all these unanswered questions going on around it. And I really do think 2019 will be the year that a lot of these questions get answered. And I'm just super excited about that.
John.
We're doing it one question at a time? Oh, this is too easy for me. I'm obviously most interested in the Mac Pro, like, for many reasons. You've all heard all my reasons and over many years. Yeah, I need a new computer. I want it to be a Mac Pro style computer. They said they're going to make one. That is all where all my interest is. And I actually am secondarily, even though I hate laptops, very interested in laptops, just because I'm so angry about this 3 or 4 year run of bad laptops. And I really, like, I have, because I know they will make a new laptop, and because there is less flexibility, like, the Mac Pro could be anything, and, you know, it could be a weird pyramid-shaped floating thing. Who knows the hell, you know, but the laptop is going to be a laptop, and I just want to see it have a decent keyboard and maybe have some more ports on it, and I'm just, you know, but I hate laptops, so I'm not interested in that. I just, in an academic sense, you know, and in kind of a Apple, you know, get your stuff together kind of, it's the part of the Mac business where they have screwed up the worst, and so they need to, where they've screwed up the worst and haven't announced the fix. They screw up the worst and probably in the Mac Pro, but they've said all the right things about that, whereas they're not saying anything about the MacBooks other than, like, maybe at best, like, stay tuned or whatever. Like, they haven't said.
They haven't even said that.
Yeah, well, they don't have to. Like, we know that, like, we're going to come out with a new laptop. Yeah, we know. We know. Like, right. You're going to come out with a new laptop eventually. They don't have to announce that. It's not like the Mac Pro where we question whether they're going to make another one. But about it, they have said nothing. And they haven't had any sort of, like, you know, roundtable, you know, where they talk about the laptops and say, we hear you about the keyboard. The next one will have a better keyboard and more ports. They have not said that. So that's my second place. That's my honorable mention.
Well, also, like, as far as the Mac goes, like, the Mac Pro doesn't affect that many people. the anything that happens to the laptops, like the laptops are the Mac. Like they are by far the biggest sellers. Like almost, you know, relatively nobody buys desktops. Like the laptops are the line. And so when the laptops have a problem, that's a way bigger impact on the Mac in general than if the desktops have a problem.
Yeah, they screwed up the Mac Pro the worst, but even a much smaller screw up on the Macs that they actually sell is a bigger deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I don't know if it's going to happen in 2019, but the thought of ARM Macs, I think, is the most interesting. It is hard for me to argue against the MacBook Pros and if there's something different happening there, because I think, Marco, you make a very, very compelling case. But in terms of just interest and what just piques my interest the most, I think it's ARM Macs. And I'm not necessarily predicting it's going to happen this year, but there's enough smoke around this fire that it's a possibility. And I just think an ARM Mac would be fascinating, both in terms of how do they manage the hardware transition, but also how do they manage the software transition? And does it look like, you know, the transition from PowerPC to Intel, or is it something totally different? Is Marzipan really a kind of a Trojan horse to get ARM Macs to be a thing? I don't know. But I think for the one that I'm most interested in, it's got to be ARM Macs, because that's kind of all-encompassing and would mark a pretty dramatic change in direction for the Mac. So that's what I'm most interested in. Now, Marco, tell me, of all the things you've gone over, what do you think will affect Apple the most?
I don't have as good of an answer for this one. I mean, if you go, like, you know, strictly speaking, what will affect them the most, I think, you know, whatever the iPhone is this fall, like, but that's kind of a boring answer. In a larger way, they're pushing into services, and that does weird things to their incentives. If you look at iCloud storage, you know, the user experience of using a phone without photo backup, without enough space for all your photos to do full blown, like, you know, iCloud photo library and iPhone backup, it's a miserable experience without that. And people get these pop-ups saying you're out of storage space. And you know what those people don't do? They don't go sign up for plans. That's what they do. Instead, they just dismiss those boxes and they think their phone is annoying. And eventually their phone breaks or gets lost and they lose all the pictures of their kid for the last 3 years. Like, that's not a great way to do these things. Like, and it does leave open competitive holes. Like, that's why you see, like, the Google ads that poke fun at it and say, you know, buy our phone, you won't have this problem. That's a pretty compelling sales pitch. So I think what has a non-trivial chance of happening is what a couple of our podcast friends have also been speculating about, is I think there might actually end up being some kind of expansion of one of the Apple services, probably what's the iPhone Care thing where you get a new phone every year? Upgrade program. I'm guessing they expand one of their subscription offerings, probably the upgrade program, into including an iPhone every 2 years, whatever it is. So an iPhone every X years, and also iCloud storage, and also Apple Music and Apple Video, to have one subscription that they can kind of, if they have this solves a number of problems. So first of all, you know, and if you can look at Amazon Prime as one of the reasons of why this is so compelling for the business too. If you have a service that you want a bunch of people to sign up for, but they aren't, you bundle it with something that they are going to pay for, right? So here's what Apple knows. Everyone wants to buy iPhones. Even now, after this disappointing quarter, everyone still wants to buy iPhones, right? And everyone doesn't want to pay for Apple Music or Apple Video separately, and everyone sure as hell does not want to pay for their photo storage. So what Apple can... Oh, and they already did this to some degree with Apple Care. The iPhone upgrade program includes Apple Care. And you still pay for it. Like, it's just the cost of the phone plus Apple Care amortized over, you know, 24 months or whatever it is. Like, you're not saving money, or you're saving some small trivial amount of money. But if you sign up for that, you get Apple Care too. Apple gets the money for Apple Care too. So they automatically tie Apple Care to the phone sales. So if they can make an even more compelling package there that includes all these other services, even at some basic levels, then they can prevent people from not getting them when they get their phone through this program. So they can bundle in and think about everything this does. This, first of all, it gets more sales to Apple stores instead of carrier stores, because the Apple store version of the subscription is more valuable. It gets more people to have a better experience and better data safety, because they actually have their phone fully backed up and all their photos backed up. And Apple still gets the money for all these services. And you know, they, if they started out with Apple Music and then later on they add Apple Video, or even if they do it up front, that gets more people into those services. And then that makes those services more valuable and makes people more likely to stick with them, because, like, if you are buying the iPhone upgrade program package anyway, and it comes with a music service, how likely are you to use Spotify after that? If it comes with a video service that you're already paying for and have anyway, are you really going to also get HBO Now or Netflix? Maybe, you know, some people won't, because they'll already be paying for this. This is what happens with Amazon Prime. This is why Prime is so big for Amazon. It's like, people all bought it for the fast shipping, and Amazon's been shoving all this other stuff into it. And people now, like, now they have this huge install base for their crappy video service, because everyone kind of had it, quote, for free anyway with the shipping program. And now they have this massive video service as a result. So, like, there's a lot of reasons, I think, for Apple to do a large bundle subscription. By the way, it also fixes iPhone sales, because it makes people more predictably upgrade no matter what phone they release. So it solves a lot of problems. It really does. If they do something like this, I don't think we've heard anything that suggests that they are doing something like this, but I think they should. And if they did this, I think that would have the biggest effect on Apple.
Yeah, I think it's hard not to imagine Apple wanting to do a kind of get all the Apple things service. You know, it seems like such an obvious answer.
Well, not all the things, because, like, they don't, what they don't want to do is lose, like, add-on sales, attachment sales, upgrade sales. Like, they're not going to give you everything, but they should give you, like, a baseline level of all these things. So, like, services that only really have a fixed price where you get everything for that fixed price, like Apple Music, that makes sense. The iPhone plan, I wouldn't expect that to be like the 2 terabyte plan. I would expect that, you know, whatever, like, the base one is, like, is it 100 gigs or something like that? Whatever the base one is, that would be the one that's probably included. And then if you want a bigger one, you pay a little bit more per month. And I think too, like, the hardware, like, you know, you can, same thing with the upgrade program now. Like, you don't get the best iPhone for the base price. Your price varies depending on the iPhone you choose, right, and how expensive that is. So I think it would be like that, you know, but it's still, you're still getting a lot for one price that you just build into your budget, and I pay, you know, $60 a month for my iPhone and the things around it, or, you know, whatever the cost is.
Yeah. John, what will affect Apple the most?
I'm going to actually take the boring answer, because that's probably the actual answer, which is what the new iPhone is. And the main reason it's a big deal in the upcoming year is because we're just coming off this, you know, this change in guidance about earnings. And then we're going to get the second impact of that story when the actual earnings come out, the ones they warned us about, right? Even though it's the same story, right? Unless there's some dramatic difference, like, oh, we warned you, but it turns out everything was great after all. It's probably not going to be, you know, they warned us, I mean, it's going to be bad, right? So this next phone is super important. And the main reason I've been thinking about this phone is, well, two reasons. One, we talked many reasons about why phone sales might be down and all sorts of the China issues or whatever, but there are other ancillary things in addition to, like, the battery replacement program. And one of the things in that giant bucket of things that probably didn't help phone sales is the fact that the whole phone line changed over to the 10 style, and some people may be wary about that because it's not what they're used to. Like, we all did that transition already and we're fine with it, but we're early adopters. Everyone else may be less so. The next one of those that's coming along, well, first of all, presumably that's going to continue, and, you know, I don't think the home button's coming back. So the new ones are all going to be like that. And now there's the rumor of USB-C floating around again. We talked about this a couple of years ago. We'll continue to talk about it until they do it, or until they lose the connectors entirely. If they did that this year, like, this is kind of, it's not a make or break phone, but it's a more important phone than normal, because it may be a new form factor, so there's a lot of question marks around that. It may have a new connector, and it's kind of important for this phone to do better. to be, like, they need, the story for 2019 needs to be better than the story we're about to have for their earnings on the XS and the XR and everything. Like, however things worked out and whoever's fault it is or whatever, the pressure is on. And so I think, because the phone is most of their money and it's their flagship product, and this is a very important year, and it's a year when potentially many things could be changing, that's going to affect them the most. But that is the boring answer, but I think it's the answer. But I do want to talk about the you know, the sort of Prime type service that Marco's talking about that has been, you know, discussed in the Apple nerd community for a while now. I keep thinking of it as Apple One because Google, of course, that calls their storage thing Google One, which is a terrible name for a storage service. But, you know, Apple One is not what they'll call it because that's too highfalutin of a name. I don't know what they'll come up with. But the thing that I have my head scratching about this Apple plan, and it has nothing to do with what Apple will do, like, because they may do something very much like what Marco described. But what I would suggest to Apple that they do in this type of strategy, that you're going to have one subscription thing, to tell them, I need to figure out what the tractor is. So Marco mentioned like the fast shipping and Amazon Prime, right? That's why everyone got Prime. I don't even know if it had any benefits beyond that in the beginning, but
it didn't.
Lots of people order stuff from Amazon, and even today, for the generation of people when Prime was introduced who are ordering things online, we're still of the generation where it's like the who buys batteries, old people, Seinfeld sketch, where shipping seemed like an affront. Like, I want stuff and I don't want to leave my house. I don't want to have to pay extra money for it to come to me. And so it's not even the amount of money. It's just that it seems like, you know, especially for small purchases where the shipping becomes a large portion of the thing, you're like, I could go to the store, but I don't want to get out of my pajamas, but I don't want to pay shipping. Like, there's a huge psychological draw of, I would love to buy everything I can on Amazon, but I just hate the idea of shipping. Maybe I can afford shipping. Maybe it's not even the money. It's just the idea of shipping. That was a tremendous tractor onto which they could attach all this crap, right? And I actually think Amazon's video service is not that bad, and they have some good original content. Music service is less appealing. But anyway, that was an incredibly powerful tractor. It still is probably the reason most people buy Prime, because it just feels good not to have to pay shipping. I don't think people even end up doing the math, right? And I don't even think it sells mostly to people who can't afford it. In fact, I think Prime probably sells the most for the people who can most afford the shipping, right? It's people who are just like, I just want to make shipping go away because I don't like that feeling, right? I don't know what the tractor is for Apple One type service unless they do what they have heretofore not done, which is, you know, well, I'm going to suggest a tractor, but like, before I suggest one, can you guys think of what's the tractor in an Apple One all-encompassing?
It's the iPhone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what about the iPhone?
It's getting an iPhone. It's you know,
you can get an iPhone now without Apple
One. Yeah, but or you can spend, you know, or you can get this wonderful monthly upgrade program where you don't have to spend $1,100 up front. You know, you can spend, you know, the whatever 40, 50, 60 bucks a month on it instead, and then you don't have to think about it. And then it comes with AppleCare.
But you can do that now.
Right. And so that's why I think what I'm suggesting is they basically do an expansion of that where, like, they just throw more stuff into that plan.
Yeah, but they'd have to charge more money if they throw more stuff into that plan.
Sure they would. But I think that is the draw, is like, for 40 bucks a month, you can get this phone, or for 50 or 60 bucks a month, you can get everything, you know. And, you know, the Amazon Prime trick to this is they don't even make it an option. I mean, they don't even give you a choice. There is no shipping-only Amazon Prime service, because if they offered one, a lot fewer people would get all the other crap that comes with it. I know I wouldn't. And so, you know, if Apple really wants to, you know, push people into this, what they would do is only offer this plan that includes everything. I don't know if they would go that far, at least maybe not at first, but they could really, like, just do the upgrade program, add 10 or 20 bucks a month to it, and have that include Apple Music and Video and iCloud storage, and that would be pretty awesome.
So here's what I think they have to use as their tractor. Like, you're right that the iPhone is the thing that has the most draw, but I think for any service like this to work, they need to do something like what I just described with Amazon, where just the idea of shipping is making that go away is the thing. Now, there's nothing really like that in the Apple world, except for maybe storage, which I'll get to in a second. But I think the best tractor for this is for Apple to give up on, like, what they have traditionally done, which is all their sort of financing, pay over time, layaway loan type things. All of them have either been the same cost as buying it up front or more expensive. I think for Apple One to work, the draw has to be get an iPhone for less money than you could get one for otherwise. Not a lot less money. In fact, so little less money that it practically doesn't matter. But the draw is not that you can get an iPhone, and not that you can get an iPhone by paying monthly instead of paying all at once, but that you can get an iPhone for less. And it doesn't even matter how much less it is. It could be like $1 less. As long as you get people talking about the idea of like, oh, if you wanted to get an iPhone, you got to do the Apple One plan because you can get it for less money. How does Apple make money on that type of thing? Well, the Apple One plan altogether, you're not just paying for the phone, you're paying for other benefits as well. So they say you should get that plan because it gives you the Apple Video Service, Apple Music, more iCloud storage, so on and so forth, all of which you pay for it, again, at some potentially reduced rate than if you bought them separately. But the main point is, but if you buy all that stuff, you get the iPhone for less money. That's all it has to be. It has to be the program that you get the reputation for. The cheapest way to get an iPhone is like this. And they're like, well, it's not actually cheaper because you're paying for a bunch of other stuff. And what if I don't want Apple Music? And it's like, yeah, but that's like an extra, you know, $5 or $10. Like, and you might have bought that anyway. In fact, that stuff is cheaper too. But the point is, you get the iPhone for less money. And that's the only tractor I can think of. And the thing that bothers me about their services thing is the tractor for Netflix is original programming. Like, they're getting into this realm with the Apple Video Service where they have to, it's like I said, I think last show, like it's like Pixar. It becomes like a hit-based business where you're making content that has to be good, kind of like the products. Like, they have to make phones that are good too, right? But the phone is their strongest pull. But in Netflix, they don't have a phone. They have to make good shows that you want to watch, and that's all they can do. So I do wonder about the Apple Video Service, like as a weird attachment thing that you put onto the tractor of getting an iPhone for a dollar less that tricks people into buying more stuff from you because they're in their mind it feels good to get a quote-unquote get a deal on an iPhone. The video service is like, oh, and they give you this video service, like it has to have some appealing value. So they do need also to have like a hit show or something. Music doesn't help because everyone's got all the same music at this point, so I don't think they can differentiate that on that. But to tell someone, yeah, and you also have to pay this extra money. The two little mini tractors they have alongside are never get that stupid dialogue that your phone is full, which means they would have to give people what we've always talked about, like just you should give people as much storage as the phones they buy can hold, right? I think that's what they have to do because the value of getting more storage is not getting more storage. It's not having to worry about storage anymore. So if you give them 100 gigs instead of 5 gigs and they still run out of space, they still hate you for it. You have to say, get this, and you won't get to the dialogue ever again. So that's a hurdle they have to overcome. And the second thing is the video service has zero value unless there's one show that people talk about that you're interested in on their service. So that's a big ask. Cell phones for slightly less, give them storage so they don't have to worry about storage anymore, and have at least one or two good shows on Apple Video that get people talking about it. That is a plan that you could get more people into. I wouldn't include AppleCare, and I wouldn't include like get the upgrade whole type thing because I think that's asking for too much. Like, you have to keep this bill down to a reasonable rate. Prime is like, what, $90 a year? And you're talking about $60, $70, $80 a month? That's not a mass market program. So that's my advice to Apple on any sort of one purchase program is eliminate concerns entirely when it comes to the storage and when it comes to, like, you know, the phone and everything. Have the tractor be get an iPhone for cheaper, and you've got to make one or two good shows. And that's a hell of a bill to fill. And I don't think actually that's all coming in 2019, which is why I still listed the iPhone. And even if they did all that in 2019, the iPhone would still affect them the most because in the first year you launch the thing, who knows who even's going to sign up for it. So long term, that may affect Apple's trajectory the most. But in 2019 itself, it's still the boring old iPhone.
I understand what you're saying about this whole tractor thing. And yeah, the obvious answer is the iPhone. But I don't know. I feel like there's a really clear marketing angle where Apple says, look, you want to have an iPhone every year. You don't want to have to worry about storage. You don't want to have to worry about your photos being backed up. You don't want to have to worry about where you're getting your music. And you don't have to worry about where you're getting your video either. And so with this one monthly fee, you will get a phone once a year. You will get all the music in the world. You will get all of our original content, which I agree with you, John, that we don't know if that original content is useful or not, but who knows. But we will give you the storage so that you never get nagged, which is what you just said. I think the storage, in addition to all the other things, may be enough pull to get people to do it. And certainly, if Apple has a couple of really hit shows, then that would put it right over the edge. But I think it's even more than the storage. I think it's just the one bill to solve all your problems, which of course isn't literally the case, but one bill to get all of your photo issues resolved, one bill to get all of your backup issues resolved, one bill to get all of your music desires resolved, one bill to hopefully get all of your TV or movie stuff resolved. And who knows, maybe they would throw in like, you can get a couple of iTunes rentals for free every month or something like that. Like, I don't suspect that to happen, but you never know. But the thought of them discounting the iPhone is a tough pill for me to swallow.
And it has to, for this whole plan, there has to be some discount somewhere in there. And no one cares about discounts on Apple Music or Apple Video or discounts on Apple Care. All they care about is discount on the iPhone. And again, you can make the discount $10. Like, it doesn't have to be a lot. But the whole point is, there has to be a value proposition. And I would even question the whole thing of like, I want an iPhone every year. I don't know if people do want an iPhone every year. I know some people who get used to their phone and want, even if you gave them a free upgrade, they'd be like, I just want to keep this phone because I like it, because I'm not sure about the new ones. Like, some people want a phone every year, and those people would probably be the most likely to pay for this thing. But it can't be one of those Apple style plans where you just add up the prices of everything and add a little bit on top, because they're like, why would I do this? Like, yes, one bill is convenient, but I liked it when they consolidated the family plan or whatever, but the mass consumer is like, any sort of bundle, there has to be a savings. And the only thing people care about savings for is the phone. It's like a Prime. Prime, people bought it when it was just shipping. Like, that's all they cared about. Everything else they didn't care about. It was on top of it. So there's nothing you can do for like, oh, I'm buying this because I get these add-ons. They have to buy it and say, yada, 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 add-ons. The whole point is that I pay less money for the iPhone. So that is totally not an Apple thing to do. I know they're raising all their prices and so on and so forth, but like, that's, you need to appeal to people's sense of getting a bargain somewhere.
Yeah, I hear you, but I really think the one fee to fix everything, because I forgot about Apple Care. You don't have to worry about breaking your screen within reason. And so I really think one fee to get it all done is maybe enough.
I think Apple Care is a deal breaker price wise because it's so damn expensive, but maybe they could just spread that out over 3 years or something. Because I know so many people who are like, I want Apple Care. Then you show them how much it is and you're like, oh, never mind.
Yep. Hi. Just as a final thought, my answer to my own question, what will affect Apple the most? I think Apple Video, or whatever it ends up being called, which I do think it will be Apple Video. I think that is really going to change Apple, because if it flops, I think that will have a ripple effect, possibly even more than the Project Titan that may or may not have ever existed. And if it's a success, then that changes the way Apple feels about things. And so suddenly they become a content company. And we actually recorded today for Relay FM members. Myself, Alex Cox, and Stephen Hackett did an episode of Fusion, which is just for Relay members, where we kind of dive into this a little bit. And it's worth listening to if you are a Relay member. And if you're not, you should be one. But anyway, I just think that having one Apple bill that solves almost all your problems might be enough. I think we should move on to Ask ATP. But before we do, Marco, any closing thoughts on all this?
I don't think so. I think you pretty much covered it. I mean, I do agree with John. There should be some kind of like significantly motivating factor, but I don't think it needs to be as much of like an exclusive discount as he says. Like, I really do think that just offering all this stuff together as part of the iPhone upgrade program for some, smaller additional fee every month, like, on the order of like $20 a month more or $15 a month more, whatever it is. Like, I think that's very powerful. Because ultimately, people are going to come in and buy iPhones anyway. The iPhone upgrade program, by most accounts we've heard, has been a success. Like, people do seem to be doing it in good numbers. And making a single price thing that includes all the stuff it just makes so much sense from both a consumer point of view and from a point of view of helping Apple get more services off the ground.
And to be clear, they can do like what you're describing, like that plan. That will be a success in and of itself. Is just, people who have lots of money will do it for the convenience. Like, there is that convenience of it. But I'm trying to think like Amazon Prime bigger, as in like, how can you get it to appeal to the widest variety of people? Not just like, how can you make it more convenient for people who are going to give you that, like us? We give them that money anyway. I buy like the biggest storage plan. I buy the family thing. Like, I buy Apple Care. I buy all the expensive phones, right? I would love to have that consolidated into a single bill. So that is a valuable product that will work for customers exactly like me. But what I'm trying to think of are all the customers who don't buy the backup plan and don't, and cheap out on the storage and, don't replace their phones every year and don't care about Apple Music or Apple Video. And like, how are you going to get them on board the Amazon Prime train?
Yeah, and I think that's me that you're describing, because I do get an iPhone almost every year. I am a devout Spotify user, but I could be convinced if I felt like I was saving even a few bucks somewhere that, and not necessarily on hardware, just somewhere. You know, if I get the video stuff, the music stuff, if I get iCloud storage, which I still am not paying for, even though, yes, I know I should, please email somebody else. You know,
did we do this already? You're not.
We did. All yes, right. We already did. I've been beaten up about it.
I was just going to ask you if you were buying the family plan, but you're not even buying the storage at all. That's terrible. Yeah. We need to put that in follow up, and until you buy it, we just ask you about it every week.
We'll make a web. Somebody will make a single serving site for
you. You're gonna be like my parents. I just have to buy it for you without your knowledge and not tell you about it.
Perfect. Sold.
I'm gonna delegate that to Marco. Actually, Marco.
I could see myself being convinced because the idea of just getting one bill that just covers everything is appealing, and maybe that makes Spotify go away. I don't watch that much Netflix. Maybe Netflix would go away. Probably not, but you never know.
The video service is the hardest because no one who's into Orange is the New Black is going to say, well, now that I've got Apple Video, people subscribe to the services because there are specific shows they want, increasingly exclusive shows. No one is going to ditch CBS All Access because they get Apple Video, because CBS All Access has Star Trek. So video is tough. They need to make good shows.
That's why, like, you know, the reason why Netflix took off so well is because you can have just Netflix and always have something to watch. You don't have that with services that are exclusively original content like HBO. Like, you can't, if you're a big HBO fan, you can go there and you can watch Game of Thrones and whatever else you watch on there, like when it's in season. But then when it's out of season, you don't have much you can go there for. Like and so if Apple's doing exclusively original content, I don't think we necessarily know that from the reports so far, but it's most likely that it's going to be exclusively original content, you know, based on how they appear to be doing things so far. So, like, if that's mostly it, like, if there's not going to be like some giant catalog of 90s sitcoms that you can watch reruns of instead when you feel like doing that, it's not going to be a service where people are like, I'm going to cancel Netflix and go to that. Like, they're going to watch stuff on there when there's a reason to. And when there's not, they're going to go elsewhere. And that's why I think it's going to be a really tough sell. Like, to get a video service off the ground in this day and age, like when all the competitors are very mature and have huge catalogs, to get something off the ground today that's probably going to have a fairly small catalog to start is not going to be easy. Especially since Apple, you know, is not incredibly good at launching these kinds of things. See the Apple Music launch.
The way everyone talks about this launch, and which I think would make sense to downscope this slightly, is like, oh, how does Apple deal with that? An Apple Video service? You just make a part of Apple Music with no increase in price. Done. Like, that's exactly the Prime model. Say you already buy Apple Music because for whatever reason you like Apple Music, works with your HomePod. Guess what? You got video for free. Oh, I don't even care about video. I was like, well, you're getting it. So deal with it. And suddenly, Apple Video has exactly the same user base as Apple Music, which is actually doing better than probably the last time we talked about it. That is not Apple One, where you get everything and a phone upgrade and the storage or whatever, but it is the obvious way to launch Apple Video in an Amazon style. That is not an Apple style. We come up with a new service and you get it for free at the same price with Apple Music. Not Apple, not the old Apple style, but the new services-oriented Apple style, if they care about getting adoption and they have any, you know, like, That's the way to do it. That is exactly the Prime plan. It's just less exciting for us hoping for an Apple One service.
Well, and you know, and maybe that's like the baby version of it. Like, I agree that is probably the more, like, it's like kind of the safer, smaller step. I don't necessarily know if it would come with no price increase. I think maybe Apple Music would suddenly become $20 a month instead of $15 for the family or whatever.
Just the usual snake. Like, the price wouldn't increase when the video was added, but Apple Music would just creep up in price like everything else in a way that you hope you don't notice. Like,
well, that's why Amazon did it. Thing. Amazon charged a fixed price for Prime for years, and then they started adding a bunch of stuff to it. And then, like, a couple of years after they added a bunch of stuff, they're like, we're going to raise the price because now you're getting so much more for this.
Yeah, and it's a proven, and the good thing is they raised the price after I think Amazon Video has proven its worth. They had some good shows that people like. They're like, I wouldn't want to get rid of Prime now, partially because of the video, because Patriot was on there and The Man in the High Castle was on it. Like, they actually have shows that I care about. In the beginning they didn't, but now they do. So when they increased the price, there was no question that I was going to keep paying that price.
Yeah, but anyway, so I think some kind of bundle subscription, I think, will happen. Whether it's part of the iPhone upgrade program or whether it's a separate thing that could be expanded Apple Music or a whole new plan that includes Apple Music, whatever it is, I think a bundle subscription that includes multiple services, at the very least, music, video, and God, I hope iCloud storage. Because, look, everyone should get iCloud storage. And it's time that Apple makes a plan that forces people like Casey to get it, even though they don't think they need it. We are sponsored this week by Aftershocks Bone Conduction Headphones. I love Bone Conduction Headphones. So here's how they work. It's different from most other headphones if you haven't tried them before. Instead of having anything sticking in your ear or resting on or pushing on or sitting around your ear, Bone Conduction Headphones don't actually block up your ears or put anything in them. They have these little tiny like micro-vibrating transducers that sit next to your ears with a headband that goes around the back of your neck. And so your ears are left totally open. And those transducers send little micro-vibrations, you don't even feel them, through your cheekbones, and it makes your eardrum pick up the vibration. So you hear sound from the Bone Conduction Headphones, but no one else does. And best of all, you also hear sound from the rest of the world because your ears aren't being plugged up or covered. And so this is actually really useful when you think about it in lots of situations. So for instance, my favorite way to use these is walking around outside, especially in the summertime, because I get really hot and sweaty. I don't want, you know, big sweaty pads on my ears. And if I do happen to sweat all over these things, they're water resistant and everything, so it's not a problem. But they don't make you hot. And when you're walking around, you can hear things going on around you. So you can hear, for instance, if you're outside walking or jogging or whatever, you can hear cars as they move. So you're not surprised. All of a sudden, there's a car behind you. You didn't even realize. That never happens with Bone Conduction Headphones because you always are aware of your surroundings. So they're great for environments like that. Even I use them all year round because even in the wintertime when I'm spending a lot of time inside, I still want to be able to listen to podcasts or take a phone call and say no if somebody's knocking on my door, or if I'm not the only person in the house, to know if somebody's calling my name. They're so useful. And Aftershocks are just great headphones in general. They have great Bluetooth reception. They have a great warranty. They have great battery life. So they're just really practical and useful headphones. I just love these things. I wear Aftershocks most of the year at least once a day. And if not more than that, they're just that good. So see for yourself at atp.aftershocks.com. Use code ATPBUNDLE. That'll get you $50 off a Trex Air bundle. That's atp.aftershocks.com, code ATPBUNDLE for $50 off a Trex Air bundle. Thank you so much to Aftershocks for making such great headphones and for sponsoring our show.
Okay, let's do some Ask ATP. Wojtek Petrusevich writes, "Hey, John, please explain again in as much detail as possible." Oh, God. Exactly why you didn't buy the 2013 Mac Pro. This is a serious question / request.
You're not going to get as much detail as possible in Ask ATP. Sorry. I thought I did it like last show. The Trashcan Mac Pro had two big sort of workstation style GPUs with tons of VRAM and one CPU. And that's not like the shape of the machine that I want. I want one fast GPU for gaming that doesn't need to have 12 gigs of RAM. I certainly don't need two of those. And the other big factor is like the Trashcan came out around about the time where we were talking about having a, you know, quad 5K, you know, what we now know is the Retina display on the not quad 5K, quad 27 inch. I think I kept referring to it, but anyway, a 5K display. But that Mac Pro seemed like it couldn't drive one even if one existed. So it's like, well, I'll wait for the next one of those because maybe the next one will be able to drive a 5K display. Ha ha ha, the next one. There never was a next one. So that's why. Like, if I was going to buy a new Mac Pro, I wanted it to be, like, we were so close to Retina on the desktop in a 27-inch form factor that it seemed wasteful to buy a machine that didn't do that. And this particular machine didn't have the internals that I wanted. It was very expensive. I was paying for workstation class GPUs with tons of VRAM that not only did I not want, but weren't actually as good as what a single gaming GPU could be. Doesn't mean the new Mac Pro is going to satisfy me anymore, but those are the reasons I didn't buy that old one. And obviously because I thought they would revise it and maybe the one the next year or the year after would support 5K, but there just never was a next one. Sorry.
Marco Silva writes, "Hey John, do you smash?" And if you've ever watched Jersey Shore, that's very funny. But I believe Marco's referring to Super Smash Brothers. And also, have you ever wandered into the world of fighting games, John?
I don't know why they're not asking this for everybody. We all have a way to play Smash Brothers now, right? All got Switches. I played Smash Brothers on the N64, on the GameCube. Did I get the Wii version? I don't think I did get the Wii version. I don't even remember if there was a Wii U version. I didn't get it for Switch. Not that into it. Like, I got it because it's a cool, fun game, but I'm just not that into fighting games, period. I have not wandered into the world of fighting games. I know a lot about it and have read a lot about it because it is the subject of many articles, both interesting and horrifying, in the recent years in the gaming press and in the past as well. Like the GameCube, I feel like was the where I started really reading about the Smash fighting game community, you know, and the tournaments and everything. And yeah, no, I've never been into that at all. It's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah, I had Super Smash Brothers for the Wii. Yeah, I think it was the Wii. And I actually really liked it. I didn't play it that terribly often, but it was a really fun party game because the way in which myself and my friends played it, none of us had any particular skills. We were just mashing on buttons randomly. And it was a lot of fun to play in like a group setting. I haven't yet picked up the one for the Switch. I probably will at some point for the exact same reason, but generally speaking, I'm not that into fighting games either. I never really played Mortal Kombat that much. I did love and play the snot out of Street Fighter II back in the day, but that was about it. Marco, where do you come down on this?
I don't play fighting games really. I mean, I barely play any games at all. But if I'm going to be playing games, it hasn't been fighting games for a long time. Like back when Street Fighter II came out for the Super Nintendo, which was the first modern fighting game. I played that with my friends at my friends' houses, but I never really went past that.
Yeah, fair enough.
The thing about fighting games is like there's what we all just describe, which is like, oh, let's just go have fun with a game. But that like there's another game that the fighting game people are playing. Like there's a big gap. It's not, you know, it's probably not as comparable in any other sort of genre. I was thinking of like Destiny. Like there's a pretty smooth spectrum from people who are just playing Destiny casually all the way up to the crazy people like me, or, you know, obviously the streamers people play all day long. But in fighting games, it's like you're either just like goofing around and having fun, or you are playing an entirely different game, right? Where like it looks different to you. It looks and feels different to you because you know all the different things about the moves and the timing and the frames of animation and the cancellations and like, people who just play fighting games like casually don't even know that stuff even exists. Like they're just, it's not all button mashing, but it's close. Like they're conceptualizing as a little person on the screen that you can make do stuff. They're not seeing the Matrix, and there's this huge gap. And then there's actual fighting game people. And to be any good at fighting games, you have to see the Matrix in that way. And it becomes a different thing. And I think it's actually very interesting. It's just not what I'm into.
Thanks to our sponsors this week, Aftershocks, Care of, and Banktivity by IGG Software, and we will talk to you next week.
Now the show is over. They didn't even mean to begin, 'cause it was accidental. Oh, it was accidental. John didn't do any research. Marco and Casey wouldn't let him, 'cause it was accidental. Oh, it was accidental. And you can find the show notes at atp.fm. And if you're into Twitter, you can follow them at CASEYLISS. So that's Casey Liss, MARCOARMENT, Marco Arment, SIRACUSA, Syracuse. It's accidental.
What exciting things happening in people's lives?
Michaela turned one.
Cute pictures of Michaela up on your Instagram.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, those were good ones.
For a one-year thing. You've had a lot of nice pictures on your Instagram lately.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I'm trying. Actually, well,
I'm just digging for compliments because they're all my pictures.
I realized as soon as you said that the pictures I put up of Aaron and me yesterday, I think both of those are John Syracuse originals, and at least one or two of the Michaela ones.
It was all of them except for the last one of Michaela.
Was it? Okay. last two, maybe? But yeah, you're right. Okay. Here it was. I thought you were complimenting me, but no, it was really...
Do you ever get I get this, I think I've talked about this before when I first started doing Instagram, people giving me crap about the fact that I take my pictures from my big camera and put them on Instagram. Like, that's cheating.
Yeah, I don't think that's the thing people actually care about anymore. Like, there were people who would give you crap about it, like, you know, years ago. But yeah, that's not a thing anymore.
Now people just care about ads in their timeline, non-chronological timeline.
No, because like the reality is, like, now a lot of what you see in your timeline is shot on professional cameras and processed in professional apps and then stuck in Instagram. Mm-hmm. Like it's there's mm-hmm. so much of it now that like, and the cameras in your phone have gotten so good that many of the
you
phone
say
shots
portrait mode. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Many of the phone shots look like pro camera shots. So yeah, I don't think anyone cares about the distinction anymore.
Yeah, I have such a complicated relationship with Instagram because the more time I spend on it, the more I like it, then the more I hate myself because I know it's Facebook. Like, well, then there's so many damn ads, but...
Yeah, the ads are out of control there. Speaking of something I would pay for a service for, like, oh, God, not that Facebook would ever let us pay to get rid of ads, but I would pay that in a second. Like, it used to be like, you know, every couple of pictures there was an ad, and now I think it's like literally every other picture is an ad. I can't handle it.
Yeah, they've really... crank them up like, and it's in the stories too. Like, it's,
yeah, in the story, like, came the stories, like, is nowhere is safe from this. Ugh.
Like, it, like, I don't. And the thing is, like, I actually like Instagram ads more than most online ads that get in my way because they actually are creepily relevant a lot of the time. And I've actually discovered some really nice products that I've bought from Instagram ads. So I know I'm like not helping the system at all by actually.
So you're the problem.
Yeah, it's like I'm like the guy who responds to spam, right? It's like that's like I have actually bought really good things from Instagram ads, and so has my wife, so has Tiff. So like, and I've heard from other people too. Like the products that get advertised to you on Instagram ads often are pretty good and often are pretty well targeted.
Maybe I need to give them more information about me because they do not have my number. Like they're advertising me clothes, for example. Like it's not, yeah. I don't know what they're doing. There was an ad, like I don't even know what the ads are for. The reason they bother me is they're so big and you have to scroll past them.
Yeah.
What the hell was, I got to launch Instagram. So, like it was an ad that I saw just before the show and I scrolled past it and I didn't even realize what it was.
I think they think I'm a woman. There's a number of reasons why the ads suggest that, but overall, like they think I'm a man often enough to sometimes suggest like, you know, men's walking shoes and stuff. So I don't know, but I have like there's a couple of like mistargeted things where like maybe it's confusing me and Tiff because we are from the same IP address. I don't know, but yeah,
all right. So I've got Star Trek ad, which I mean I guess that's close, but like that's not a great ad because I already know about that show. Like I'm very aware of it. And anyway, Leaf gutter blocker thing?
Yeah, I've seen that one
that's
a lot
the
too.
One,
well, that's that? That's actually pretty well targeted. You're a homeowner. You care about such things, probably.
I'm not in the market. Greek yogurt? No. I don't know. Like the one Instagram ad I ever saw that I had any interest in, that I actually looked at long enough to know what it is, was that service that I'm sure everyone gets this Instagram ad. Like it knows that I play video games, so there's this thing where they do like these metal posters of like video game characters and people from movies and stuff. Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I looked at that because it had a cool picture of some like Destiny or Halo thing or whatever, and I'm like, all right, they know I play video games and I like those video games and I would like a cool looking thing. But then I didn't, you know, do anything about that. It's not like I actually bought anything. Yeah, Instagram and the stories with the green circles now, I'm really confused by that. Have you done some of those, Casey?
Yeah, that's close friends.
Explain to me how that works. I mean, obviously, I know how it's supposed to be like only your close friends see this, but I didn't know there was a way to say someone is a close friend in Instagram.
Yeah, so this is only in the last maybe month or so, but you can set up a list, and I don't think there's a numeric limit, or if there is, it's fairly, what's the word I'm looking for? There, you can put a lot.
Generous.
Generous, thank you. God, I couldn't think of the word. Thank you. So there's this new thing from last month or so, and it's where you can specify that some number of people, and the number is fairly generous, are your close friends. And when you put up an Instagram story, you can elect to make it public, or you can elect for only close friends to see it. And naturally, there is no hint that you have put up a close friend story to people who are not your close friends. So, you know, if you did not mark me as a close friend, John, but you did put up an Instagram story for your close friends, then I would be none the wiser unless I was like looking over, say, Marco's shoulder and I saw you with a green circle around you. But the green indicates that some of that content, if not all of that content, is just for close friends. And I really like that a lot because I think to some degree there's an implied, I don't know, seriousness isn't the word I'm looking for, but like, Instagram carries a little bit of implied weight in my mind that the things you put on there are pretty or special or interesting. And like, especially with Instagram stories, my day-to-day life is really to anyone else in the world would be quite boring and very uninteresting. And so I don't really put up a lot on Insta stories unless I'm at a football game or a concert or traveling or something like that. But my close friends, of which I think my list is like 30-ish, my close friends might give a crap about the boring administrivia that I do day to day. And so I might be way more forthcoming with my close friends and putting up Insta stories that only they get to see. And there's a handful of people that have made me close friends of theirs, which is really nice. And I've really enjoyed being able to interact with their stories because I know going into it that this is less polished, I guess, than the sort of thing I would normally see on Instagram or especially an Instagram story. And there's even more casuality. That's not a word, but it's more casual when it's with close friends than it is even with stories. And I feel like stories is a more casual version of Instagram and a more ephemeral, of course, version of Instagram to begin with.
I find this feature terrifying because it's yet another opportunity for you to not be aware that you aren't sending it to your close friends when you thought you were. Like, it's one of those rules, like never put anything up on the internet that you wouldn't want the world to see. This feature enables you to do that. It's a feature made to put things, and it's just... Like, can you imagine, like, if you put something in there that's supposed to, especially if you actually treat it as just your close friends and you want to say something important or heartfelt or show some, you know, thing where, like, your wife walks by in her underwear in the background or something, like, and you didn't do, you thought you were on close friends, but you weren't, like, it's just, you know, I can't even imagine. I mean, then again, I'm someone who never does Instagram stories at all. So obviously I'm not the target market. Maybe it's an awesome feature and obviously you like it. So every time I see that green circle, like it just makes me think about all the non-green circles that people thought might've thought were green circles when they weren't.
I take your point, but I forget exactly how the UI works. I haven't done it in a few days at least, but I believe there's like two different buttons on the bottom of the screen when you take a picture or movie or what have you, and it's pretty clear which one does what, and there's no hoodwinking or any of the other creepy stuff that Facebook typically does yet. there's none of that to make it easy for you to make a mistake. I take your point. It doesn't mean you're wrong by any means, but I don't know. I really, really like it. I'm getting some real-time follow-up from an anonymous person whose name might sound like Schmike, who has said that he has occasionally put up a story that was intended for close friends but ended up going to the whole world. So such things do happen from time to time.
Yeah, the one thing that gets me on Instagram is, like, I post Instagram so rarely, right? But I think... if you count the number of times I've intentionally posted an Instagram and compare it to the number of times I have somehow hit something that accidentally turned on, like it's either the camera or maybe it's like the starting a story type thing.
Oh, yeah,
I accidentally activate that all the time. And I'm like, oh, stop, whatever you're doing, stop, turn off camera. I'm not, you know, it must just because I brushed the bottom at the bottom of the thing, or maybe I'm going for another icon, but they don't have labels on them and they're not good. Yeah, I think I do that more often than I intentionally post.
Just to show the relevance of the ads, I've been scrolling through as you guys have been talking and documenting all the ads I'm seeing.
Watches.
No, surprisingly not. But New York Times subscription was the first one. That's actually pretty good. Like, that's pretty well targeted. I read the New York Times sometimes. I don't subscribe to it. I've thought about subscribing to it. I'm in their demographic.
I've never seen that ad, and I go to the New York Times all the time. Bad job. Yeah,
so I got that. I have something called Pop Chart, which like makes posters of things. That was kind of a miss. Fancy upstate New York architectural homes in the mountains. Mm-hmm. That's actually a pretty well targeted ad. Marine Layer, former sponsor of this show. They make good like soft t-shirts. That's a great ad. I have some other shirts. That's perfect. Waterproof sneakers. It's an okay ad. I've bought athletic sneakers from there before, so that makes sense. Fancy leather dress shoes. Actually pretty good. I've tapped on some of those ads before.
Maybe you just buy more stuff than me. That has more data.
An iPhone cloth case. I don't know where that one came from, but not too bad. Some kind of fancy mattress for athletes. T-shirts for people who love the Big Lebowski. Okay. A hands-free dog leash. I do like a lot of dog posts. And finally, a men's like subscription clothing box service, which I am like, you know, pretty much in the demographic for. So yeah, these are actually pretty well targeted ads to me.
Meanwhile, I'm looking at an ad about, as far as I can tell, I can't tell what the ad is for.
Wait, people are going crazy over these MacBook skins, John.
No, the ad that I'm looking at is, I think trying to get me to travel to Iceland. Not a well-targeted ad. But the thing is, I can't even tell. With the audio off, I can't tell. The account that it's from is LINDBLADEXP. Lindblad Exp? I don't know.
I'm sure that's how it's pronounced.
Anyway, so I'm not going to Iceland. I'm not a big traveler. Like, I don't know where the hell that's coming from. What else do we have? A smart home blinds closing thing. I own zero smart home things.
I've seen that. The thing that like, loops around the cord.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good idea.
Okay, well, this one's closer. It's a dongle. USB-C dongle. All right. The thing I used to like about Instagram ads is they would have nice photos in them. I would be like, well, even if it's not a thing I care about, it has a pretty photo. But I think Instagram ad makers have figured out they don't need to make a nice photo anymore. They just need to have like a crass kind of.
Well, if they're like high end price, like the upstate New York mountain house architecture ones, those photos are beautiful. Like I almost like I kind of make a habit of not liking ads because like I don't want to feed them that. But I almost liked that one because it was just really nice pictures.
don't like ads. OPP France is a, it's a sneaker company called OPP.
Yeah, you know me.
Yeah, that's, I don't know.
I'm getting my first ad that I'm seeing is Goosebumps the movie, which okay.
I will say my favorite sneakers came. It's the On Running brand, and that I discovered that through Instagram ads. I discovered it. I bought the shoes. They're fantastic.
You're the problem. You're propping up the entire Instagram economy.
Yeah,
Quaker chia peach overnight oats.
Oh, finally found a relevant ad. My dog's GPS, which I already own, is being advertised to me. Good job.
Westin Hotels. Some of my ads are really, really, really annoyingly and uncomfortably good, but most of them, I feel like, are just, you know, shotgun approach. Let's just put this in front of as many eyeballs as we can and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these are clearly like, you know, give me, you know, men 25 to 34 or whatever, you know, like
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
a lot of it is like stuff like that you can tell. But a lot of it is like a little, is more focused and sometimes very focused. And you know, and some of them are like cheap, garbagey stuff, like back this Kickstarter for this thing you don't need. Like those are kind of crappy. But like, there's enough good ones that I don't mind the quality of the ads anymore. Like when they first joined my timeline, I was very offended by their presence, just because I've never had ads before. But now that I've had them for a long time and I'm accustomed to them, and I've gotten some actually pretty good products out of them, I don't mind them as much. I do think that they are a little bit too frequent. Like they need to turn that dial down a little bit, and of course they never will. But like if I had my ideal case, like I know they're never going to get rid of the ads completely, but I do wish there would be fewer of them and have them be more spaced out.
You know, this is tangentially related. Do you ever look at the Explore tab, which is the little magnifying glass?
Occasionally. If I like run out of stuff and I'm not tired yet or whatever.
That is exactly when I use it, for the record. But I have found that tab is eerily good at predicting what I would want to see. Like lots of cars, fair bit of nerd stuff, and then a smattering of other things.
Yeah, mine is entirely watches and dogs. Like that's all it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yep. John at the bottom on the tab bar, not the home, but the magnifying glass.
Magnifying glass. I have never tapped on this before in my life. Here we go.
So this is to me exactly what Instagram thinks you are. And in my case, it's stunningly accurate.
Yeah, this is not good. It's showing me Trevor Noah. I did watch a Trevor Noah video on Twitter today, so that's a good guess that I might want to see it, kind of. Then there's a bunch of pictures of people that I don't recognize. I don't know why I would think I would want to see these people. I have no idea who they are. There's one picture of food because I follow Nevin's food account.
Do you follow Nevin's dog? He's really cute.
No, I know about Max, but I don't follow dog accounts. No, it's just a bunch of people I don't know. Why would I ever? Well, so much for that.
Maybe you don't put in enough to Instagram.
No, I don't follow like car accounts, dog accounts. Like I follow people that I know. So as far as it's concerned, it looks like this person likes pictures of people. I mean, I guess that's true. Yeah, like only time I ever hit the like button is on like a picture of somebody that I know. Or the only thing I'll do in the Marco vein is cute kids. I'll almost always give. But that's cute kids of people I know. It's not just random cute kids, right?
First of all, you are missing out by not being a part of dog Instagram. Dog Instagram is very powerful.
I'm on dog Twitter. Like I get my dogs on Twitter.
Dog Instagram's better, I'm telling you.
I mean, maybe, but like I feel like I'm cheating on my dog. Plus my dog is really cute anyway.
That sweet precious angel.
Yeah, I get all the dog loving I need in person. I'm just looking at Instagram just to see pictures from people I know, and that's it. So maybe I'm using it wrong, but whatever. That's what I do.
The only thing for me that kind of like poisons my Explore tab sometimes is there's a large part of Instagram that I normally don't see any of and don't want to see any of, which is basically people just screenshotting viral tweets and trying to make like viral memes spread on their Instagram accounts that they just stole from Twitter and other social networks. Like, so it's just like, it's like I'm coming here to not be on Twitter. And then when they bring Twitter to me, it kind of ruins that.
Have you seen the stories of stories?
No, is that a thing now? Oh, God.
Yeah, you can do a story of someone else's story.
Oh, good.
And I was like, as if these things aren't blurry and low resolution enough. Now you're going to do someone else's story within your story. Ugh, don't like it. I think maybe that's a feature that only certain like high influence people have, but I see it. And I'm like, it is like you said, it's like pictures of tweets.
Well, there is a thing where like you can, if somebody tags you in their story, it gives you the quick ability to re-story it. In like one of those little like inset things.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I'm talking more about like it's just like people like screenshotting memes and GIFs and Twitter posts and making Instagram posts out of them. And,
yeah. Or taking a picture of their computer screen as a story of them holding their phone up to their computer screen. It's like great. It's a cool story, bro.